broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for March 29th in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is hour one of two, and our goal, everybody's goal should be to preserve the greatest country on the face of the earth, to promote God, family, and country, and to protect life, liberty, and property. We do it using the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America. That is our guide. The checks and balances is brilliant as well. One of the great peaceful restorative solutions that we have at our fingertips. Wow, you don't do very well after you've taken a day or so off, huh? Yeah, talking seems to be a tongue twister. Welcome to the broadcast. Hope you're all doing absolutely fantastic. I had a delightful weekend full of God, family, and country. Hopefully you did as well. And by the way, as you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Our website's libertyroundtable.com. That's our radio show site. LovingLiberty.net, that's our nationally syndicated radio network promoting the broadcast. LovingLiberty.net. Tell everyone you know, would you please? Share the love, if you will. All right. Without further ado, a quick recap of Saturday's show. John Hopkins School of Medicine, Professor Dr. Marty Makary, I think is how you say it, he blasted public health officials, just blasted them. Why? For dire predictions on the spread of COCO. Yeah, on COVID-19. He said, believe it or not, may have caused a whole lot of loss of credibility with the public. Yeah, this guy's saying, you know what? You're just telling everybody how horrible the corona is and how, you know, you're just doomsday stuff. It's got to stop. Amen to that reality check. Former CDC director Robert Redfield, COVID-19 came from a Wuhan lab, and it started months earlier than we realized, more like October, November range, maybe even September, October range, he says. He says, I'm a virologist. I spent my whole life in virology. Art Moore with the story, WND.com. Now, the reason this is interesting is the mainstream press attacking poor Robert Redfield relentlessly right now, saying he, you know, makes these speculations without any evidence, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But the funny thing is that they go on in the rest of the story and they say, we believe that it came from a, you know, it jumped from animals to man via some kind of a wet, you know, farmer's market or whatever of meat and all this kind of stuff. They don't have any evidence or proof of their claims either. Wait a minute. Well, they say theirs is more likely than the other. Uh-huh. And you're going to trust them on their more likelies? These are the people that have lied to you and told you not to wear masks, then to wear masks. They've lied to you and said 6 feet needs to be the rule for distancing. And then they say, well, it could really be 3 feet a year later. These are the people that tell you vaccines are safe and effective and they're not even vaccines at all. They're medical experiments on the whole world. I mean, this is the insane part, right? All right, we thought we'd bring that to your attention. Twitter says that it will not remove Melania's naked pictures. That's the former president's wife. Twitter will not remove Melania, the first lady's, naked pictures from the internet, which were posted by Cardi B during her Twitter feud with Candace Owens. Candace says, I am 100% suing Cardi B. The whole thing's just a fiasco. So you take Sam Bushman off of Twitter because he won't toe the line on your vaccine lies. But, hey, the battle between this perverted Cardi B and dragging the first lady and naked pictures in the middle of it, that's all fine to leave up on Twitter, don't you know? What a shame. Parler claims that it repeatedly warned the FBI about threats well ahead of the January 6th riots that took place on the Capitol. What do you think about that? Parler did warn the FBI, but the FBI simply ignored all those warnings and now wants to blame social media as the cause. But of all the purveyors and promoters of these things, Facebook is used as a great organizing tool for a lot of the violence and riots and pillage and plundering that takes place across America. How come Facebook not really in the crosshairs? Mark Zuckerberg and crew at Facebook donating millions and millions of dollars to political campaigns and agendas to manipulate votes. And there's no real accountability. Just have those guys get up there and grandstand in Congress and then walk away with no accountability and no responsibility whatsoever. It's a waste of time. It's political theater. But what do you expect? The Department of Homeland Security, for example, employing big tech to spy on the American people through social media. Yeah, I guess they're using lists of contractors to compile list of businesses, writes Bob Unruh, WND.com. Yeah, so there you have it. No wonder they don't want to get back at Facebook. Big tech is being used to spy on the American people, so you can't be too hard on the folks over at big tech. They're helping out quite a bit with the government's crackdown on normal life and the violation of, what, all the amendments we hold dear? Yeah, they say, don't worry, we're doing this in a very mindful way, a very careful way that's mindful of privacy and civil liberties because it's focused on narratives, not people. That's a lie. And what's the narrative you guys paint? That all conservative constitutionalists, all heterosexual males are racist and haters and really committing insurrections with Donald? Is that your narrative, you lying thieves? Uh-huh, I get it. See, it's the narrative that's the problem because it's not the truth. Okay, you can't take a whole bunch of people and paint them with a broad brush like that. That's dishonest and immoral, to say the least. Right? Don't they say thou shalt not bear false witness? Thank you very much. All right, they say that violent, domestic violent extremism poses the most lethal, persistent terrorism-related threat to our homeland today. Uh-huh. I think the government's involved in some of the greatest domestic violence acts of all time. Yeah, the Department of Homeland Security is working with state, federal, local, tribal, and non-government partners to address this threat. And all of our efforts are carried out in close coordination with our privacy, our civil rights, our civil liberties experts, they say. Uh-huh. Do you trust your government on that one, ladies and gentlemen? I certainly don't. We had our guest on, Richard Mack, second hour on Saturday, founder and president of CSPOA, the Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officer Association, works with local law enforcement, especially sheriffs, to have the people get involved in backing their sheriffs. CSPOA.org, become a lifetime member today, I am. We also talked about Cuomo is upping National Guard presence in New York City airports, and they have screened more than 456,000 airline passengers since starting their mission to help the New York State Department limit the spread of the COCO, they say. Wow. 500 soldiers and airmen are helping at 12 airports across the state of New York. Folks, this is literally crazy. You've literally got the National Guard on the airport making sure people comply with COCO requirements at the airports. It gets worse, as our guest will articulate coming up on your radio. Now, believe it or not, 70% of employees in America, at least according to the polls, if you believe them, they want COVID-19 vaccines mandated, required before people return back to offices, they claim a survey shows. The American people are ignorant enough to trade their security. I'm sorry, to trade their liberty for security, they're going to wind up with neither. Don't trade your liberty for security, but 70% they claim are ready to go. Can employers make the COVID-19 vaccinations mandatory? Can government make the COVID-19 vaccinations mandatory? They're saying the answer is yes. Lawmakers, believe it or not, are calling on Joe Biden to make COVID-19 vaccinations mandatory. Yeah, you got to ask the question, hey, doc, will I need proof of vaccination? Yeah, you may need a COVID-19 vaccine passport to travel in 2021. We will get to that as the broadcast unfolds today. Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg gave $350 million, not to a specific political candidate, but directly to government-paid election officials in hand-picked Democrat strongholds in an effort to, listen, increase targeted voter turnout. So literally fraudulent money put into campaigns just to manipulate elections, and zero accountability for Mark Zuckerberg. Yeah. We're talking about the legislation, H.R. 1, will undermine our elections and make these problems significantly worse. We must stop this bill in the Senate, writes Matt Staver, Liberty Counsel. I'm telling you, it is a disaster bill. It is designed to put Democrats in power for every future election, many say. Could the grid handle a boom in the electric cars, USA Today? I talked about it, and I don't think so. They say, oh, we can handle it, no problem. I say they're lying to you, folks. They cannot handle an electric spike like that. Just ask the Texans if you don't agree with me. Just ask the folks that in California have had massive blackouts and brownouts and everything else for quite some time. Just ask those people if you think I don't know what I'm talking about. But don't worry, all the experts tell you that it's going to be just fine if we move everything to electricity. But literally a 300-mile charge for one of those vehicles equates to powering your house for like several days. And they say we have plenty of electricity. Don't worry, Sam. You guys are off your rockers crazy. Just get rid of all the reliable sources of electricity. Shut down all the coal-fired power plants and everything else, and then run around and go, we have plenty of electricity, Sam. Are you guys off your rockers? Wow, there you have it. All right, that's the recap of Saturday and the news that the networks refused to use. We covered straight to our guest when we return. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live. I am Sam Bushman.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
My brother and two other boys were the ones that got in the car with her, and she was drunk. The road that goes to her house is like really windy, and she was taking that road at 80 to 100 miles per hour and hit into the road barrier. Her door flung open. She ran out across the street to get away from it, and the other three boys were trapped in it, and the car exploded. And then when my mom found out about it, she called me at work. I don't care what you have to do, just get up here to the hospital. You know, I parked my car and I went inside, and they took us back to this little room. My mom told me that Jay had been killed, and I lost it. The other people, so they're like, well, you can drink, but just be careful when you drink, you know? So I don't want anything to do with it, because it took my brother away from me.
A public service message from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org. Welcome back to Liberty Roundtable Live, my friend.
Great to be back, Sam. Thank you.
We got a serious call to action, and it must be taken seriously now.
Well, and that's the legalized election theft bill, H.R. 1. You mentioned it Saturday. I'm mentioning it again today. It must be important. It is important. This is a bill that federalizes, nationalizes presidential elections. Now, the elections of senators and representatives is squarely placed, the responsibility for those elections is squarely placed on the legislatures of the several states. It's called the Times, Places, and Manners Clause of the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 4, Clause 1. Now, Article 1, the whole article deals with the legislature of the, you know, U.S. Senate and the U.S. House, which comprises Congress. That Article 1 talks about representatives and senators and says, the quote, "The times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof, comma." And then comes a subordinate clause, Sam. "But the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations," end of quote. Now, the authors of H.R. 1 are using that subordinate clause to justify their arrogation of immense power. They're undermining the power of the states. They're arrogating this power unto themselves. They're saying we get to determine the times, manners, places, and manners of the election of our senators and representatives. Well, that is not at all what the framers wrote when they wrote this clause into the Constitution. The main clause, as I said, is that the times, places, and manner is decided by the state legislatures. That is the main clause. And this proviso, this subordinate clause, this proviso was contested strongly by at the time the Constitution was debated and ratified. It was publicly debated, this proviso was. And there were numerous people that said that proviso has to be eliminated. They wanted it taken out. Dr. James McClurg of Virginia, for example, who had served at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, was one of these. Another was Noah Webster. The fellow whose dictionary later became famous, the Webster Dictionary. Webster wrote an influential pamphlet strongly supporting the Constitution, but demanding that that proviso be removed. Well, these people were very skeptical of giving the general government power to amend the legislation of the several states, with regard to elections. I mean, there's no better way to benefit an incumbent than to give the incumbent power to rewrite the election laws. They knew that. They worried that a congressman from Philadelphia, for example, might induce his colleagues in Congress to locate only one polling place in Pennsylvania, in the congressman's own neighborhood in Philadelphia, for example. That would create a tremendous hardship on all of the residents of Pennsylvania to have to travel to Philadelphia to cast a vote. That's a huge hardship. And they didn't want that to happen. They wanted the legislatures of the state to be in charge of that. Well, so because of this widespread concern about the proviso, Sam, advocates for the ratification of the U.S. Constitution, they assured the public that the Congress's power over congressional elections would be extremely limited. They said the proviso was designed only for emergencies. Alexander Conti Hansen of Maryland added this. He said that Congress would exercise its times, places, and manner authority only in cases of invasion, legislative neglect, or obstinate refusal to pass election laws, or if a state crafted its election laws with a sinister purpose, or in a way to injure the general government. It was never meant, he wrote, that Congress should at any time interfere, unless on the failure of a state legislature, or to alter such regulations as may be obviously improper, end of quote. So basically, Sam, if a state legislature provides for the election of U.S. senators and U.S. representatives in a manner that's fair and transparent and, so that all of its residents have access to do so to cast votes, then the Congress has no ability, the general government has no authority to alter the laws regarding those elections. They have no authority to come in and tell a state what to do. So there you have it, Sam. The Constitution, that proviso in the Constitution on which most of H.R. 1 is founded, was only intended to be used in times of emergency, or if the legislature refused to pass reasonable laws. And we can see that that is not the case in all 50 states. The laws are reasonable, and Congress has no authority to come in and tell the states what to do in that case. Sam?
That is correct. And that's part of the problem is that, you know, Richard Mack's Supreme Court case win really highlights that reality that there are dual sovereigns. And there's literally jurisdictional boundaries, and there is no authority for the feds to do this. But you know what? People don't understand the truth, and they let it happen all the time. And if you don't insist on your rights and understand your rights and claim and defend your rights, you will lose them. And that's what we really see going on here, folks. We need a call to action. We need to stop, quote, legalized plunder or legalized election theft in this case, ladies and gentlemen. You got to reject H.R. 1 and S.1. That's for sure. You want a job, Lowell? Good luck, buddy.
Get a shot. That's what they're saying in, you know, around the country. That's what they're hinting at. Ron Paul wrote a great column last week, posted at campaignforliberty.org. He mentions that that one family got kicked off of the Sprint Airlines flight because their four-year-old autistic son was not wearing a mask. The family was removed from the plane even though the boy's doctor had decided that the boy should be exempted from a mask mandate because he panics from a mask and then engages in behavior that is dangerous to himself. We've all seen the effects of autism on a person. I can understand that this young man, this four-year-old boy, you know, you cover up his face, he panics, and he might throw himself around, bang his head on the wall and stuff like that, because, you know, that's kind of what they do if autism is severe. So anyway, and besides that, Sam, four-year-olds do not present much risk of spreading or contracting the coronavirus in the first place. And so Ron Paul writes this. He says, quote, mask mandates have as much to do with health care as Transportation Security Administration, meaning the TSA, screenings have to do with stopping terrorism. Masks and TSA screenings are security theater done to reassure those frightened by government and media propaganda regarding coronavirus and terrorism that the government is protecting them, end of quote. Yeah, so it's just horrendous, this theater that goes on. The TSA has been doing it for years as they grope and image people going through the airport to board a plane, and now we've got theater going on with regard to the mask mandate. And so Ron Paul speculates that this COVID oppression will worsen if vaccine passports are implemented. What if you're denied access to a public place like a park or a sports arena because you have not gotten your shot? Now, worse still, he asks, what if a potential employer refuses to hire you unless you are properly vaccinated? Well, that's what proponents of the mandatory E-Verify want. Sam, I never did support mandatory E-Verify. I never have supported it, especially if implemented as a federal program. I could go along with it if it were done by the states and they never shared their data with the feds, but I don't know. I just never saw that happening, so I've never supported E-Verify.
Yeah, I reject it on the state level as well, because there's no authority to collect information like that. And I know people say, well, the states have a lot more latitude than the feds do. Yes, they do. And I agree with that. And I agree with the separate jurisdictions. But I also agree, a lot of people believe that the government, federal government by nature, is bad government and the states are great government. And I find the states, for the most part, just as tyrannical as the federal government almost. So you better be careful of which government you love to employ, ladies and gentlemen. What I want to do is lock government down to its jurisdictional boundaries. And I want them to only carry out what we've given consent for them to carry out. And I repeat, nothing, nothing, nothing more. Quick pause. States do need just to say no, but they're not doing it because they're on the money gravy train. Quick pause. Lowell Nelson on your radio.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
E USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
The Suez Canal Authority says that salvage teams have partially refloated the colossal container ship Ever Given and reported that the ship has been corrected by 80% and freed from the shoreline. The ship is about as long as the Empire State Building is tall. From a media perspective, the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin will be the biggest trial of the streaming TV age. The trial gets underway Monday. WKRN reported at least four people have died after heavy rain caused flooding to reach record levels in Nashville, Tennessee. At least 130 people had to be rescued from flooded areas around Nashville. Nashville Mayor John Cooper told reporters at a news conference Sunday he signed local state of emergency to seek state and federal resources for recovery efforts in Davidson County. The NCAA men's basketball tournament continues tonight. Oregon State and Houston go at it at 7:15 p.m. Eastern on CBS. This is USA Radio News.
This is good news, maybe exactly when you need it to. Right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. This could save you money on top of all that you'll save each month by becoming a member of MediShare. So many people are looking for a healthcare solution right now, seeing the cost of COBRA plans, for instance, and MediShare is the affordable alternative to health insurance. The typical family saves $500 a month. You might save even more. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's healthcare costs. And because of the current economic situation, they're making it easier than ever. Apply by March 31st. You can save an additional $170 on your first month. I'll give you the number here in a second. And if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to receive your additional savings. Maybe now is the time to make the switch like more than 400,000 people already have and start saving. Here it is. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
As the Biden administration continues to censor the media from the crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border, the calls for transparency grow louder. Jeremy Scott from the USA Radio News Bureau in Oregon reports.
Trump says in his view the situation on the border with a surge of migrants, many of them unaccompanied children, will only get worse. He told Fox he's leaning towards taking a trip to the U.S.-Mexico border soon.
The Border Patrol wants me to go. I don't think there's a rush for me to go.
The visit is likely to come in the next couple of weeks. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki tells Fox News Sunday the media will be allowed access to facilities on the border.
We are mindful of the fact that we are in the middle of a pandemic. We want to keep these kids safe, keep the staff safe, but we are absolutely committed to transparency and providing access to media to the Border Patrol facilities, and we're working to get that done as soon as we can.
President Biden has rolled back a number of key measures that the Trump administration implemented to enforce security along the southern border.
President Biden, through executive order, removed the money to finish the border wall. USA Radio News.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, with me. We're talking about liberty. And, you know, I know a lot of people trust the states a lot more than the federal government. I personally am not one of them. Okay? You want a job? You got to get a shot, they're saying. Call to action? You know, they're literally passing these vote fraud laws. They committed vote fraud in the first place. Now they want to basically codify it by law. And now they say the states just need to say no. Mike Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center is saying that. And I appreciate his point. I get that there's a balance of power and there's jurisdiction. There's delegated authority to different groups, the state, the fed, the local, you know, I understand all that. But I find government just to be tyrannical wherever it's at, whenever it takes on anything that it doesn't have specific consent or authority to do, codified in appropriate documents like the Constitution, whether it be the state and or the federal, etc. So we need to be really, really careful that we don't just make heroes out of state government, but yet enemies out of federal government. They both can get radically tyrannical in a second if you let them, Lowell.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Sam, and I don't place much confidence in state government either, but I do more so than the general government. The reason I say that is because the state government is closer to the people. It's, you know, one person has more impact in his local city council elections, in other words, than he does in his county, and he has more impact in his city than it does his state. he has more impact in the state than he does in the general government. Simply because it's a numbers game. You know, you just have more impact because there are fewer people involved in the election of your city council. There might be several hundred who vote for
and it's a proximity game, too, that they're closer to you literally physically.
Yeah, exactly. And they're your neighbors more often. Your city council members are more likely to be your neighbors. And so you have more pull, more influence. And they're more likely to understand your situation and to empathize with it. And so that's why I do put more confidence. I'm like Thomas Jefferson, let no more be heard in confidence in men, but bind them down by change of the Constitution. I'm a big proponent of that. But if I have to put confidence in one or the other, then I'll do it the more local, the better. In fact, I put extreme confidence in local government when local government is self-government. That's the very best type of government, Sam. You and I both know that. If you and I govern ourselves, we have no need of external forces and influences to govern us if we'll simply govern ourselves. And, you know, that's the very best government is self-government. But the point that Michael Meharry is making here in his article is the Tenth Amendment Center, tenthamendmentcenter.com, is that he talks about the event in Tampa known as Gasparilla. Now, I never heard of this event. I watched a couple of videos about it. It's a huge event. They're celebrating the pirates coming to Florida, Tampa, and basically it's a reenactment, a parade involving numerous weekends, numerous weeks. But basically, they have events all during the first quarter of the year. They never had one in 21. This year, it's been canceled because of COVID. But in 2020, that was their last one. Estimated over 300,000 people attended the event in 2020. Parades, floats, beer parties at nighttime, children's parades in the daytime, fun runs, exercise things, art show, music shows, everything you can think of. Just a huge, huge celebration that's called Gasparilla. And if you're listening and you live in Tampa, you know what I'm talking about. Lots of people and lots of fun. But there's a lot of lawbreaking that goes on, too. That's what Michael Meharry observed when he attended Gasparilla. What kind of lawbreaking do we mean? Well, you know, a little bit of vandalism, lewd behavior, drunkenness, and so forth. All of these common sense property laws that get broken during this time. But there's hundreds of cops there, but Michael Meharry observed they never made any arrests despite this, all this law breaking going on. And basically his point is this, that as more people ignore a command, then enforcement becomes increasingly difficult. In other words, a few hundred cops cannot enforce their will on 300,000 people. And herein lies the secret to nullification, writes Michael Meharry. States don't have to actually do anything. They just have to stop helping the feds enforce the unconstitutional federal mandates and unconstitutional federal programs, which is most of them, by the way. I haven't met a federal program that's not unconstitutional. So these unconstitutional laws, they may remain on the books, but they become impossible to enforce. So, for all practical purposes, noncompliance renders them null, void, and of no effect. And that's what James Madison wrote in Federalist Number 46 when he wrote a refusal to cooperate with officers of the Union. Well, Madison and Jefferson agreed on this point, and when they wrote the resolves of 98 and 99 in Kentucky and for Virginia, respectively, that if an officer of the general government votes for a constitutional law that was unpopular, then the remedy is to vote him out of office, right? That's if they vote for a constitutional law that's unpopular. The remedy there is to vote him out of office. But if an officer of the union or of the general government votes for or administers an unconstitutional law, then the remedy is to nullify that law. They're very clear about this, very plain. So, the National Governors Association understands this quite well. In 2013, for example, in the run-up to the government shutdown, the NGA wrote to congressional leadership begging them to avoid the shutdown, saying this, quote, states are partners with the federal government in implementing most federal programs, they wrote, a lack of certainty at the federal level from a shutdown therefore translates directly into uncertainty and instability at the state level. End of quote. So did you catch that, Sam? They wrote most federal programs. What that means is that states can refuse to serve as partners in those federal programs and basically render them useless and null and void, basically. So anyway, it's a great place.
I agree 100% with the principle that states do need to just say no. Michael Meharry's right about that. It proves nullification is a reality. That they serve as partners also means they can choose not to serve as partners. The state constitutions give a lot of direction on what the states can and cannot do based on the delegated authority we, the people, have given them, as well as the federal government. There is a separation there. And I agree with the general principle, the government that's closer to the people is better. I agree with the smaller number of people. Hey, it's better. Because you have a greater ability to influence. I support all that 100%. I guess where I want to be very careful is that we don't lose sight of our obligation as citizens, okay? I, as an American citizen, need to understand what authority we delegated to them, okay? Governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. So I need to understand what I've consented to let my federal government, the general government, do. And I need to mandate that they do nothing more or less than what I've given them responsibility and charge to do. Same thing with the states, okay? We need to be very careful that we only let them act within the scope of authority we have granted to them, that we've given to them, on loan, really, because we can always take it back. Never forget that reality either. So states have a responsibility to only do what we've consented them to do as well. By the consent of the governed, do they derive their just powers? So my only point is that I want people to understand, what have we given the states to do? Is it everything? Can they just run around and do whatever they want? And the answer is not even maybe. So we fall into this trap when we go to the states because it's better than the federal government, I agree, for most things. But if we're not careful, what we do is just ignorantly turn over that same abuse to the state, and we're really no better off. So what we need to learn to do is jealously guard our liberties and understand jurisdictionally what we have given consent for them to do and demand they do nothing more or less than that very mandate by the will or the consent of the people. That's my main point, Lowell.
Yeah, and I agree, Sam, totally agree. And I think that Ezra Taft Benson gave us the best test for the proper role of government when he said that if you have the authority to walk across the street and demand something of me, then government has that authority, because the government can only get authority from us, the people. But if you do not have the moral authority to walk across the street and demand me to do something, you know, compel specific performance or refrain from doing something, then neither does the government have that authority. So public schools, for example, do you have the moral authority to walk across the street and demand money from me to educate your children, Sam?
Of course not. And that's one of the reasons that it's one of the 10th planks of the Communist Manifesto to mandate government education, because it falls along the lines of tyrannical communist principles, not the principles of liberty, which America is known for. When we get back, we're going to compare and contrast two different states. How about Wisconsin and New York? Should we start there? All right, we'll do it in seconds with Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org.
Conceived in liberty, carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of 1-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
With news the networks refuse to use. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's have Lowell Nelson compare and contrast a couple of states to get an idea of what we're talking about. Lowell?
Yeah, Wisconsin is the first state. The Wisconsin General Assembly, they approved legislation forbidding Wisconsin government officials from requiring individuals to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. And about this, Campaign for Liberty Chairman Ron Paul issued the following statement, quote, "If governments can force individuals to receive vaccines and other medical treatments against their will, there is no area of life safe from government mandates. All who value liberty should celebrate the Wisconsin Assembly's passage of legislation forbidding government officials from mandating any individual receive the COVID vaccine," end of quote. And of course, I would add this, Sam, all who value liberty should ask his own legislators to protect his right to choose whether to receive any medical treatment in his state. Now, contrast this in a situation in Wisconsin with the situation in New York, where Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, announced last week that New York has rolled out the nation's first COVID vaccine passport program with the introduction of what he calls the Excelsior Pass. And according to reports, the COVID-19 vaccine passport is already for use at dozens of venues statewide, including Madison Square Garden. And while advertised as a voluntary measure, the New York State officials are making it clear they're not participating in the program will result in an individual being essentially shut out from society. So there's the contrast, Sam. You got Wisconsin on one hand saying, we're not going to force our citizens to take this COVID vaccine, and New York, on the other hand, saying if you don't get the vaccine, you're not going to be allowed in the sports arena, you know, and other public places. You know, sports arena is just one place. But, you know, how New York can be thought of as following the science is beyond me, but that's what they claim they're doing, is thoughtful, science-based reopening by using this Excelsior Pass, this vaccine.
And, Lowell, this is why I highlight. This is why I highlight so much that you can't just go, oh, if it's the state, it's okay. New York's flat out out of control. They've been given no consent at the federal level and or the state level to create these vaccination passports. There is no law. There's no constitutional provision on the federal or the state level. So don't be deceived into thinking that it's because of the state they can do it. We have never given them any consent to do it at all. Wisconsin's right. New York's flat out wrong.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Sam. Perfectly right. And by the way, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, to his great credit, has termed the idea of a vaccine passport as a misguided authoritarian idea, which you and I would both agree with Ron DeSantis on that point. But the governors of Illinois and Hawaii, well, they're more like New York. They look favorably at the idea of a vaccine passport. Unfortunately, and these states are not alone embracing this social credit score model. Several European Union members, several South American countries, and China and other nations are moving forward on their own vaccine passport system. So what are the legislators in your state going to do? Well, that's partially up to you, folks. And so that's why you need to contact your state legislators and demand that the state outlaw mandatory vaccinations. Sam, and my worry on this, by the way, after comparing and contrasting, I know there's some states that are leaning toward this passport idea, and there's those who are leaning against it. What I worry about the most, Sam, is that the politicians will crow about how they never passed a law requiring people get the vaccines, but through the force and the coercion of business regulation, businesses will coerce their employees and their customers to get vaccinated in order to do business with them, in order to walk in and sit down in the Madison Square Garden, for example. And so the politicians won't take any of the blame for this mandatory vaccination idea. They'll blame it on the business. They'll say, well, the business, they have their private business. They can do what they want. If they require their people to be vaccinated, then they can. That's their choice, right? And so the politicians that brought this on, the pharmaceutical companies that brought this on, they're going to skate free of the blame, and it's going to be the businessman who takes the blame on the chin. That's what I worry about, Sam.
And understand, ladies and gentlemen, you know, fears of them holding you down and forcing the jab on you and stuff like that. I submit to you, they're too smart. That's not going to happen. They know full well the second that happens widespread, you will get a revolt from the people. And so they're going to back into it slowly. They're going to start with the most liberal states. They're going to create trial balloons and pilot projects. And you know what? If you want to go to California, then you're going to have to do this. If you're going to want to do that. And it's all public-private partnership. It's fascism on steroids. Okay, because what you have is, for example, Disney World now saying, hey, we have the right to do surveillance technology. Okay, they're literally saying, because of the COVID now, we have the right to use face recognition. So now you've got, you know, a public place, what? I guess it's not quite the happiest place on earth. It's second to California, right? But what they're literally doing, folks, is they're using private sector in conjunction with business. And just when you think you've got them stopped, or that they won't focus on this, they double down. All right? So, for example, Arizona governor lifts mass mandates and all COVID restrictions. That's great. But again, New York launches nation's first vaccine passports. Los Angeles Unified School District being sued over mandatory vaccines. So the divide is on. But now Bill Gates, daily pass software will allow kids to attend school. Bill's going to get into the business now with his software to determine, hey, have you complied? Florida, Magic Kingdom, says COVID-19 is reason to install facial recognition. Now, I look at that and I go, okay, so the governor is doing a good job saying, no, we're not going to mandate around here. But they're just using one of the biggest businesses, one of the most popular places to say, fine, we'll just surveil you. We'll find out what state you've come from. And then we'll start to apply pressure through the Magic Kingdom. Sounds like magic, doesn't it, Lowell?
Yeah, it sure does. That's the coercive and corrosive, I might add, effect of the private partner, private-public partnerships. You get business to do the dirty work for you. So you don't get blamed for it, Sam.
Well, anyway, I bring that up because, look, they're going to make this very difficult. This is the battle of our lifetime over our liberty. And I think Ron Paul's right. You know what? They're taking away more liberty than you can possibly imagine. Okay? There's no area of life safe if we let this go, folks. If they can use facial recognition, what they'll do with the facial recognition is track down the non-compliers. Track down the insurrectionists, track down the people who are endangering the rest of society. See where this goes if you're not very careful. Wow.
Yeah.
All right, the Michigan.
You're ahead, right, Will. Sam. It puts way too much power in the hands of the government bureaucrats so again, I echo your theme, which is that the government only has the power that we, the people, have delegated to it. And the people need to, legislators and county commissioners and city councilmen, they need to understand the proper role of government, and that is that it only has the power that people have. And if people don't have the power, then neither does government. And so if you don't have the moral authority to walk across the street and require me to take the jab, then neither does government have that authority, nor does the business have
that. And
that
applies to
either.
The states too, ladies and gentlemen. Be very clear and understand that reality check. Now, final point, the Capitol riots really served as a blueprint for them. They'll literally be able to use facial recognition, videos, Facebook, Twitter, all the social media services, and they're going to back that into now hunting you down. Okay, and when you start seeing facial recognition at Magic Kingdom, they will use that to hunt you down. You saw a real scary example of that in Charlottesville, and you saw a real scary example of that at the Capitol. So beware, folks. That's why I brought up this Florida Magic Kingdom facial recognition stuff. Because of the COCO, now they say they can build a database. Well, what's going to happen to that Disney-backed database? Are they going to use that then to tap into, if the FBI asks for records, you think the Magic Kingdom is going to give it to them? Where does this all go, ladies and gentlemen? And I'm telling you right now, it goes to bureaucrats violating their authority on a scale you have never seen before. All right, let's go to the Michigan pizzeria owner. I guess she got released from jail. That's good news, right?
Yeah, probably so. We talked about this last week. Marlena Pavlos Hackney, this 55-year-old woman who fled communism in her home country of Poland in 1983, arrived in America in 1988, became a citizen in 92, opened her business in Michigan as she worked toward achieving the American dream, Sam. She's a pizzeria owner, and her place is packed all the time. She did close her restaurant for about 3 months during the second quarter of last year, which is when everyone else was evaluating the virulence of the virus and so forth. But then she decided that the governor had overstepped her bounds, and she reopened her business for opened a restaurant for business. Well, the state of Michigan ordered her to close her enterprise earlier this year, and she refused. So they issued a warrant for her arrest, and she refused to turn herself in by March 18. And so police arrested her on Friday morning, March 19th, about 5:45 a.m. at a traffic stop. And her restaurant was packed that day, by the way, Friday. The day she was arrested, her restaurant was packed with people in support of her. And then on Monday, so that's where we left the story last week. Well, I just want to give you an update. On Monday, the Republican Party of Michigan held a press conference in front of her pizzeria and called on the attorney general there to release Pavlos Hackney from prison. One of the speakers, Senator Roger Victory, asked, why is there a resident of the state of Michigan currently in jail, and the justification of her being in jail is simply operating her business? Great question. Well, other lawmakers called on the attorney general to investigate COVID deaths in nursing homes instead of shutting down Marlena's restaurant. They rightly said, speaking of checks and balances, that there was no process involved in shutting down Marlena's place and shutting down other restaurants in the state. And that's a great point, Sam. We haven't focused on that very much, but there is no due process involved in shutting down these restaurants. And isn't this really a takings when the government can come along and say, you've got to close your business? That is a takings. It's a denial of your right to do business, Sam. And so, anyway, her husband paid a fine, $15,000 fine, got her out of jail on Tuesday. So that's the update on Pavlos Hackney. And we'll see where this goes from that. But we need more people like this, a courageous woman, Sam, standing up against the tyranny of the state. Sam?
It's all about education. It's all about taking your sacred liberty seriously, ladies and gentlemen. For Lowell Nelson and Sam Bushman, thank you so much for listening. Lowell, we'll talk soon, my friend.
We got it, Sam. Thank you.
CampaignForLiberty.org, his website, LibertyRoundtable.com, LovingLiberty.net, our websites. For Sam and Lowell, we declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.